I read the script on a plane, and I was just this conundrum of this man and how he came out from this early act here of a woman dead in a car that he'd caused to this speech at the end and being elected, to the Senate again. I just thought, how does this happen?
That was Jason Clarke, star of the new movie Chappaquiddick, playing Ted Kennedy.
Era.
Oh, there you go. My bad, very bad Ted Kennedy imitation. I'm Neil Rosen. Welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined here, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
That's right.
And Bill McCuddy.
We are here, and we'll be here to Chicago.
I wish I could do the imitation as well as you. And Mike Sargent is joining us again this week.
I didn't prepare anything.
Oh, well, we'll figure it out. Mike Sargent's friend Keith is sitting in the background, but we'll get to that later.
Sitting in. That's like a cool jazz group. We got somebody sitting in this week.
Well, you have the dog, so I figured I'd bring Keith.
Oh, nice.
So anyway,
Congratulations, Keith.
Gee, I wonder what this is about. It's about Chappaquiddick, the fatal car crash that took the life of Mary Jo.
Ted, open the door. Open the door.
Yeah, okay, that took sorry. The life of Mary Jo Kopechne. Kopechne, am I pronouncing
Kopechne,
that
Kopechne, yes,
right? You are.
Who was
also coats the stomach.
Who it was 1969, and Ted Kennedy was trying to convince. Well, they had, a dalliance of some sort, and he was trying to convince her to join his presidential campaign team. And
they have sex and they kiss. And both of those scenes were taken out of the movie. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah,
taken out of the movie.
Pressure Kennedys were able to exert on what did and didn't get shown in this. Also, yeah. I heard she was pregnant. And I heard that for years. And they don't touch on anything close to that in this
There's
film.
A lot of problems with this movie, but let me just lay the plot out. So basically, they're, and it's a glaring omission, the fact that I wish they would have shown the scene where they did have sex, because basically there's a scene where Kate Mara, who plays Mary Jo, is on the beach with a girlfriend, and she's kind of alluding to the fact that maybe she wants to hook up with him or something like that. Or
isn't he dreamy?
Yeah. Or,
he's a Kennedy.
He's a hunk, you know, that kind of thing. And then they're on the Chappaquiddick Island off of Martha's Vineyard, and they're in the car, and they're parked, and they're talking. It doesn't seem really romantic, and a sheriff goes, like, do you guys need assistance? And then Ted Kennedy peels out with the car, goes off the bridge. You never... He gets out of the car. You never see how he gets out of the car, which I think is another real mistake with the movie. You never really find out how he got out of the car.
Right.
You see her drowning.
That's glaring I got some other problems
with this movie. You see her drowning. You see him not...
No, technically, you don't see her drowning. Well, and technically, they don't think she drowned. They think she asphyxiated on a lack of oxygen.
Well,
it's different.
You see the car filling up with water. And she keeps grasping for air as the car fills up. You know, she keeps going to the higher and higher up in the roof of the car as the car is submerged underwater. He could have done something to save her by calling it in, but he doesn't do that, and just kind of goes back to the house where they're all hanging out at. And he's just, you know, and then he goes to his father for help. Joe Kennedy, played by Bruce Dern.
Who steals the fucking movie.
He has
one word. One word.
Alibi.
Exactly. And that's it.
Alibi is the one word. And but he doesn't write anything he has to say, because he's post-stroke Joe Kennedy. He has to write down on a piece of paper where the aide goes, he wrote you a note. He wrote you a note, Senator. He wrote you a note. Your father wrote you a note. You know what I mean? So
you're out.
But Bill Brigoli, what do you think of this thing?
Because I grew up not too far from there. You can't tell by my
accent,
but I grew up, in southern Massachusetts.
Okay.
I mean, Kennedy was a god. The whole family was very important at the time. It was also the weekend, remember, and they bring this up a lot in the movie, that man finally landed on the moon.
Very much so.
But the papers in Boston,
that saved his ass.
Yeah, and the papers in Boston.
Well, not really. It did ruin his presidential bid.
No, I mean, it saved his ass that there was a big move. There was another big story in the front page of all the papers.
Right. Absolutely. Well, the media is an interesting component. But go ahead, Bill.
Get finished,
Yeah, well, the papers went nuts, and they were speculating wildly as to whether or not there was an affair, that sort of thing. And then there was the apology a week later, and that kind of did it. It was weird. It was just.
I have to say, his speech, which I had forgotten about as a kid, was so masterfully crafted. The way it talked about a bridge that came off at a strange angle, and how he tried it. It was really, really good. And I was,
It almost was like a White House Oval Office speech, like the setting, like where he shot it.
Yeah.
You know? It looked like it was like a presidential type of address.
Well, that was the whole concept, though. To you're supposed to be, you know, at that time,
the intimacy
on TV was like the deal,
right?
And you're supposed to, he's supposed to look presidential. He's supposed to look, you know, they raise the table to the height of like the White House, the
yeah, I did notice
table.
That. They never explained that. I just thought he wanted to look taller on camera,
but I want to hear what you guys think before I say anything.
Okay, I'm going to tell you that. I was very bored with the movie. I did not know until Bill McCuddy said it at this particular point that there was a scene where they...
That really happened? That Kennedy drove into the water?
That they had sex and they cut it out of the movie. And what was the other scene you said they cut out of the movie?
It showed them kissing, and then it showed... I want to be very specific. It showed a scene in which they had clearly just had sex. So I don't know whether he was zipping up his zipper or... as it was described to me by a studio person, is that it was obvious that they had just had sex. Now, there is a scene where they're on the hood of a car and sort of looking up the stars and chatting, and you're supposed to get sort of a romantic vibe out of that, I guess. But I have to tell you, just to jump in here, because you know I always do, what you don't like about it, the straightforward telling of it.
I thought it was just kind of dull.
I thought that was really effective. I thought it was a good, no nonsense, no bullshit.
I agree with you.
Except
in a couple of parts.
Like Law and Order, like here are the facts, here's the law, and here's the order.
Neil, you saw it in Neil and what's your name? Mike.
Yes. That's Mike Sartre.
Neil and Mike saw it in a different screening than Bill and I.
Right.
Oh, that's right. We were at the same screening.
We were in the same screening, and there was a point where there was derisive laughter from our screening crowd.
Oh, really?
And I wonder if that...
Laughing at what point?
Well, he's getting ready to do the speech, and he's talking to his aide, played by Ed Helms, and they start talking about Noah and the Moses and the Red Sea.
Wow.
And the line is something like, nobody drowned at the bottom of the Red Sea, or Moses didn't drown a girl at the bottom of the Red Sea, something like that.
Yeah, Ed Helms is good in this, too.
Well,
it's
interesting. They cast two comics in this. They cast Jim Gaffigan, as you just said, and they cast Ed Helms, both of who play straight roles, not non-comedic roles. They're fine. I just found, you know, I didn't really hate the movie, but it was just kind of like the big problem for me is they show you that, as Bill McCuddy said, that the car's underwater. She could have been saved. The car keeps filling up. She keeps grasping up to get the last.
Right. Water's coming in from somewhere, but we don't understand where, because when he dives back in, all the windows are closed.
I want to know how he got the fuck out of the car.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I think that's a real problem with the movie. I mean, there's extensive time spent on her, you know.
I think the answer is they don't know.
Not being able to get out of the car.
I think the answer, Neil, is they don't know, and they didn't want to do anything irresponsible. And I think that's a little bit to the movie's credit. I mean, it really deals straight cards here. And
well, they don't even show you. I mean, you never see whether Ted Kennedy jumped in the, you know, like stayed in the water to try to get her out of the car.
No, he jumps in the water. He jumps back in as soon as he comes out.
Right.
And then he comes out and goes.
Yes, but yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. But Ed Helms and Jim Gaffigan jump in the water. And they
an hour later or whatever.
They can't open the door.
Right.
And some guy dressed up in a scuba outfit, you know, with an oxygen tank gets in there. And
the next day.
And he can't get, I mean, so it's, you know, the water pressure. You can't open the door. You can't open the window. So she can't.
The guy in the oxygen tank also says a very critical thing in the movie. If somebody had just called me last night, I could have gotten out of here.
Right.
25 minutes, I could have gotten her out. But the point is, if you can't get in the car because there's water pressure up against the door and you can't get the window open and you can't get out of the car, I mean, how in the world did he get out of the car? I mean, you know, unscathed, and he goes to a dinner party like a couple of hours later. He's like sitting down,
That's part of the whole mystery of the stuff.
Well,
you're not going to get everything explained, Neil.
All right, can I tell you what I thought? Because, I'm definitely...
Okay.
First of all, I did like it. You know, I think that the flaws that the things that you don't like, the things that they omitted, that they cut out, it felt sanitized, like you're watching a TV movie where they cut out that part and you're a kid and you don't really know what happened, but where were they going in the car anyway? Like, she sees him sitting alone.
The story
puts her
is that
hand
he's,
on
he's
her
driving
shoulder.
Her to the ferry to get off the island.
That's
but that
the
ferry
story.
Wouldn't be
that,
running
that doesn't make
the
any
morning.
Sense. It
when they go the wrong
sense.
Way, there's a clear big sign that says ferry left and they go to
they
the
went
right.
Off to do something. They just cut that out because, in my opinion, really, that was not the most fascinating part of the movie. Like, that's the dirt. Like,
did you like the Joe Kennedy orchestrating this whole situation?
I like like that.
When he comes in with a team of like we handled the Bay of Pigs and the
all of that
Cuban Missile Crisis. Did we, you know, you're not
also
talking to
the people he puts together. Think Ted is a complete fuck up
and did
a horrible thing but no stay with me. At the end of the day, they're hired to get him off and right. they do, and that to me, whether you think the movie is boring or not, is the most horrific and cool thing about the whole film.
It is, and
it's that there was a time in this country where a bunch of men could stand in a room and decide the fate of somebody without the internet and without everybody knocking down that they actually had the respect of local law and local reporters. There was only one New York Times reporter who apparently was up there on vacation,
right.
and that's the only reason the thing even broke early.
Right. Had
they were
not
they were deciding when to break the news in the first place.
Right. Well, I don't know
and
if they had respect.
That sent a chill up my spine.
They had that control, but you know.
But there was a moment when I turned to Bill, and he's like, Ted is going like, I don't know, I'm smart. I could have been president. I'm just like, I almost yelled, Fredo.
Well, there was a great line in the movie actually where he goes. Ted Kennedy goes, Joe Jr. That's the one
that died.
World
yeah.
War II. Joe Jr. was the chosen one. Jack was the charismatic one. Bobby was the brilliant one. I'm the goofball. Right, I'm right, the idiot.
Right. I'm the one who gets in trouble all the time.
Right. I'm the
one who doesn't even get to have sex on screen in the movie.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting. I mean, I remember even as a kid that when they were all alive, I was very young, but it was looked upon as. I remember my mother saying, "Yeah, Ted Kennedy, he's not the brightest one."
He was Ringo.
He was Ringo.
He was Ringo.
But, you know, but that's what I thought was interesting about the film. You know, just like you said, or like the actor said, why he wanted it. And he was fascinating. Like, how could somebody do this? I felt you really understood what Ted was conflicted about. Like,
actually,
what was going on.
That leads into a great soundbite.
Okay.
You know, his brother was president of the United States and was shot. You know, he was campaigning in another hotel when his other brother was shot dead in front of the whole world. It's a very strange existence Ted has, you know, and I think that played a big part in why he walked away from the car and didn't report it.
Well, he had in a lot of ways checked out, I thought.
Well, that's a good point.
The father is really controlling, I mean, even post-stroke when he can't speak, and as Bill McCuddy said, he only had one word to say, which he said twice, which was alibi, you know what I mean? The father, which apparently kind of rigged the election for John F. Kennedy, and you know, he's still, everybody defers to the father. It's like this chilling line which he writes on paper going, "You've lost my confidence and this is your last chance to gain my confidence back, and if you don't do this my way, you will never gain my confidence."
And he doesn't do it.
That's the note you got from Spectrum, isn't it?
I missed the line. What about Spectrum?
Said, that's the note you got from Spectrum.
Oh, that's funny.
But I those were the things I thought were interesting. The how everything you were saying, Bill, about the power structure and how they could manipulate the media, and you know where that seat of power lied, all their loyalty to Joe Sr., and how even in a stroke in a wheelchair, he still wielded quite a bit of power.
Yeah, I think it's...
You're the head of the family now. Start acting like...
By the way, we're all doing these crappy impersonations, and I want to make one thing very clear. Jason Clarke doesn't go to that trough.
No, he does not.
He really doesn't. Yeah. He looks a little like Ted, and he sounds a little like Ted, but I think what he was most interested in as an actor, if he was here, he would probably agree or disagree, is that he wanted to give the impression of the guy, but not do an impression of the guy.
I think it is better. Doing a crappy, like we're doing. Like
he's already got an Australian accent he has to overcome.
Right. Yes. I think that
a little lower.
Bill Bugoli, what do you think of the movie? Would you recommend this thing?
I would, actually.
Boston guy?
It's not, you're not going to get blown away by it. If you're on either one side, it hasn't got enough damning evidence if you're a Kennedy hater, and it hasn't got enough to make him a saint if you're a Kennedy lover. It's going to disappoint a lot of people on either side, on either extreme. But for those of us in the middle, it's at least interesting. You always wonder what was going on behind the scenes. And like my favorite part was this clan of advisors, Sorensen, all these heavy-duty guys telling him what to do.
I agree. I found that fascinating. I found the whole dynamic of, you know, these guys coming in and their perspective on it and how they controlled
the situation. And they couldn't stand him, or they didn't like him.
They knew
that's very clear in the room that they think he's an idiot.
He was.
Like, he's like, I'm going to do this my way. And it's like, you're not doing anything.
Shut up, Ted.
Yeah, just be quiet and sit down. Like have a cookie.
When he tells him that his license is expired, they all explode.
Yeah, right.
By the way, Ed Helms I thought was great. I thought
Jim Gaffigan.
Gaffigan was underused, or I didn't. I think Jim Gaffigan can make a better.
Like Kate Mara?
I thought she was great. I thought she was great as Mary Jo.
Didn't have much screen time.
And Olivia Thirlby, I've always loved Olivia Thirlby, and that's the woman, she, all the way back from Juno, and she in this thing is defending Kennedy. You know, he had these.
There's that moment.
Boiler
that's
room girl.
Too, that
yeah.
Her best friend has just died.
Right.
And she's like, okay, how can I help this?
How can we help the senator?
But there are, I mean, obviously this is the intent of the movie, but those questions still remain of why did he not, if he got out of the car, why didn't he try to save her life? He, you know, saving her life would have helped his political career. I mean, maybe this
but again, I don't think he ever felt he had control of his life. And I think that was part of what you saw here. Like, he's thrown into a situation that, you know, is pre-cell phone. So he had no choice but to ask his friends, his family, help me, you know.
What do I do?
Instead of calling them, what do I do? Yeah. Call the police. Like, that's not new. So
well, Ed Helms and Jim Gaffigan say you got to call it in.
Right.
But, you know, I was
but
thinking
then they
about
leave
it,
him.
And he didn't do that.
Well, the more we talk about this, the more we're giving it away.
No,
I mean, people know what happened, but I think some of the nuance we should leave for.
But I wonder, the fact that he didn't call it in, had he gotten to that team of advisors that his father put together right away, would they have said, don't call it? I mean,
I'm not sure they could have gotten those people there that quickly.
Well, no, it
had
to
be. Their advice has been not to call it in right away until they spin it.
I think they were going to not call it in.
All
right, so Bill Bregoli, mild recommendation. Mild recommendation.
If you like politics and that kind of thing, you'll love this movie. If not, it's okay.
They make so few movies for adults. I would say please go support this. You're going to be enlightened, if not entertained. And the man clearly changed his life after this event, became one of the most influential and powerful senators.
The lion, Nickel and the
yeah,
lion.
Yeah, he straightened up something about it, Mac. So this is definitely worth seeing.
I'm going to give it a. I'm not going to recommend it, but I'm really on the edge. So basically, if you're very, very.
You're teetering on the bridge?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I hated the movie. It's okay. It's kind of dull. And, you know, I'd say if it comes on HBO and you're really interested in Kennedy and this situation, check it out. I don't think this is worth full price of the box
office. Two apples?
I'd go to two and a half. Yeah, two apples. I'd say two apples on a scale of 1 to 4. All right. Mike is the only one that saw this movie, and we're going to talk about Blockers in a moment, but let's first talk about a movie that only Mike saw that opens this weekend called...
That Bruce Dern could have been in.
Quiet Place.
Called The Quiet Place.
All right, here's
right,
A Quiet Place.
That's very funny because there's no dialogue, and I think the person who got the job of doing the closed captioning on this movie, it was a real breeze. It was like, great, I'm going to work 3 minutes.
It's a silent movie. That's what Emily Blunt turned to.
It is a silent movie. Well, here's the thing I'd say. First of all, it's essentially, it's billing as a horror film. It's really a Twilight Zone episode. And if you don't know the premise, aliens come, they wipe out humanity, but too late we discover they're blind, but they have a heightened sense of sound. So if you want to stay alive, you got to stay quiet. So people who have lived, they've learned how to be totally silent. Everybody,
Neil, you'd have lasted 10 seconds in this world.
10. Two.
The aliens would get you. But knowing that premise, it always comes down to, like, what do they do with it? There's, in some ways, it's very masterful because it's really well written. You know, there's really a lot of things that made me, I interviewed the screenwriters because I wanted to. But at the same time, by the end, by the third act, it definitely, I wouldn't say devolves, but, you know, there's the
falls
creature.
Falls apart a little bit?
It just kind of becomes
100% yesterday genre. On Rotten Tomatoes. There isn't a critic that's going to say a bad thing about it so far.
So did they do,
it's very original.
Did they learn sign language? Like the
everybody's
actual,
a sign
they have
language.
To, one of the characters
sign
is
language.
Deaf.
One of the characters is deaf, but sign language is
played by a real deaf girl.
Played by a real deaf girl.
So everybody's doing, like, not like their own interpretation, so they're doing the actual official
American sign language.
They actually do American sign language, which the girl who plays the deaf girl, who is deaf, taught the cast to do. One last thing I got to say, what's interesting is John Krasinski. This is his third film. Krasinski, from his beginnings, who would picture him directing Twilight Zone episodes? Who would picture him as Jack Ryan?
Who
the hell?
Who would picture What's his appeal directing, you know, Get Out?
You know, I could see that. You know, looking at their humor, I could see him doing some kind of a satirical genre film, which is what Get Out is in many ways. But
well, I, you know, there's a lot of
Jack Krasinski.
Okay, but it worked for you.
It worked 100%.
And so I have a soundbite from Emily Blunt who says the lack of dialogue ratchets up the tension in the movie.
Yes, it does.
The mistake is to describe this film as a silent film. It's effectively a film without dialogue, but sound plays another character in this film. Sound's the enemy of this family. Sound's like the other bad guy. And so every scene had to be injected with that kind of tension. I mean, it's painful to live silently. It's very hard to live silently.
And she's pregnant. Am I giving two? Like, should
it's
I?
Such a great. Let's put it this whole.
Imagine
movie
having to
up.
Give birth and not
the
make a sound.
The whole movie is set up. It's set up and payoff. And when it pays off, wow!
But
really?
Wow! No, really. You will appreciate
what
it.
What if you drop like a frying pan?
Well, that happens, right?
That happens. And yeah, and the aliens will come and get you.
And then in addition to, from the trailer I saw, in addition to sign language, they have all these lights they can turn on and off.
Yes, they do.
They have red lights they can turn on in their backyard and to tell the kids, get the fuck out of there and stuff like that.
It's much better.
And they walk on sand
so
that they can't be heard.
Yes, they do.
He spreads sand everywhere. So
and Krasinski, who helped write the script, like it came in, he did a rewrite. That was his addition.
So the aliens... Because animals make sounds, they're not after animals like dogs.
Well, birds survived, but not a lot of animals.
So
a lot of animals.
So if there's like a dog or a deer in the woods
killed,
or something, or a bear,
totally
interesting. Where they eat the people?
Totally eat them. Yes.
Interesting.
You know, Emily Blunt had tea with us with Neil and I like 9 months ago. At the Four Seasons. And she alluded to something that she wanted to do with her husband. I don't know if it was this.
It was this.
She was after Sicario, and it was before or during, I think, the Tom Cruise thing, Edge of Tomorrow, which is Ready, Rap, Repeat, or whatever they renamed it when it came out in streaming. Great movie, by the way. I love that. So she was talking about something that he was going to do, and I thought it was the fracking movie, but I think that was already done that he did with Matt Damon. So maybe it was this thing.
Steal the movie?
She doesn't steal the movie, but she does a great job. You know, she. This is a movie written by people who love movies.
Is there really no dialogue pretty much in the entire movie?
Very, very, very.
In the beginning, the setup and the attack, right? There's TVs going off and stuff like that. Or
I'm not even going to tell you.
Okay.
There's a whispered line in the trailer.
Okay, so
with Emily Blunt.
So highly recommended.
Highly.
I'm going to go see it.
Highly. Highly. And see it with the intended audience. Go see it on 42nd Street, and you know, at night.
42nd Street.
Wow. 20 years ago, we'd be dead if we did
that. That happens in the movie. I have to say, and tell me if this happens, whoever's listening, when you see this movie. All of a sudden, the audience gets really, really quiet.
Well, that was reported about the premiere the other night. They said that
everybody gets really, really quiet.
Really, like intently.
So they're emulating what they see on
TV. Well, yeah, and again, it's unconscious, you know. And I saw it at a screening where, you know, they had brought some filler in, so you got, you know, the people ready for a horror movie. Silence. And when they do laugh, it's like that relief laugh because the tension, you're like, okay, where are they going to go with this?
Last question on this movie. Is it as good as a Twilight Zone?
Absolutely. A really good Twilight Zone
episode. Everything
that's
Rod Serling going.
Everything
submitted for your approval.
100% Rotten Tomatoes.
That's rare.
All right. And that's rare.
You're traveling through another.
And maybe.
Neil, tell us about Blockers.
No, I want you.
Blockers.
Okay, so Bill.
You loved
Bill
it,
Rigoli.
I heard.
Oh, God. So Bill Rigoli and I.
Call it what it is. It's cock blockers.
Right. So they have a rooster, a image of a rooster.
Cock.
Right, which is also known as a cock, and the word blockers. It's being called blockers, but it's really cock blockers. And Bill Brigoli, why don't you do the honors of explaining this piece of shit movie that blocks everybody, right?
Well, be the Neil Blocker.
Yeah, I'll be the Neil Blocker. There are three young women who are about to go to their senior prom, and two of them definitely want to have sex, not with each other, but with their boyfriends.
They want to leave their
virginity. One sort of on the fence for a reason you'll find out later if you haven't figured it out, like I figured it out in 2 seconds. And then there are their parents, and they know it's going to happen. Their parents have become friends ever since the little girls were friends. And the parents want to block this enjoyment that the girls are planning on having, and they go to great lengths to do so.
So the
that's the short version. Neil will go on at length.
So the parents...
They chaperone the prom?
Well, they make a pact, these three girls, that they're going to all lose their virginity on prom night. And
is that what happens at prom?
Somehow, Leslie Mann, who's one of the parents,
never
packs into her daughter's, or kind of looks at the screen of her daughter's computer, and there's all these emojis on it, and they figure it out, sort of like silent language in a quiet place. They interpret with the emoji, the eggplant emoji, and some other emojis.
So this is as good as A Quiet Place, you're saying?
That they're going to, they made a pact, all lose their virginity on prom night. And John
Cena. It's Cena.
And is he from like the WWE?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so they're trying to make him the next, Dwayne Johnson.
They put him in a couple of things.
He was in some Amy Schumer. He was in Amy Schumer. Yeah. Trainwreck.
Okay, so
killed him.
So John Cena, Leslie Mann, and I don't know who's that third actor guy.
I honestly don't know.
He says three parents, and they go to great lengths to stop this from happening. And of course, it's really stupid. Of course, they don't succeed. I'm not gonna tell you whether the kids, who even gives a shit, whether the kids have sex or not is a really
spoiler
irrelevant.
Alert. But, we don't care.
In all their attempts to catch up with the kids and find the kids, the car breaks down. You know, there's all these obvious things that happen, and it's just. It's one of the worst written, worst cast things that I've seen. Bill Brigoli, we were not. I was looking for you actually in the screen.
I was in the total opposite end of the theater.
I kept looking
actually.
For you because I was saving a seat for you, and I didn't see you.
That's creepy.
And then at the end of the, and I'm sitting with Jack Rico, a frequent guest on this podcast.
Jack Rico loved this movie.
And at the end of this movie, Jack Rico and I walk out, and I look at Jack, and I'm about to say like, "This was that like the worst piece of shit you've ever seen in your life?" And he goes, "That was great. I just loved that. That was hysterically funny." and while I'm talking to him, Bill Brigoli texted me, goes, "That was awful." And then Bill Brigoli texts me and says, "It makes me want to stop going to the movies ever again." And I wrote back,
that's a quote. It's movie blockers.
And then I wrote to Bill McCuddy, who asked me, who had a sarcastic comment going like, "I missed the screening. Gee, I bet it was great." Sarcastically, I go, "Mere words cannot describe how horrible this movie is." I mean, just to give you one idea, there's this movie scene which Jack B goes, "Wasn't that hilarious?" I go, "No." They try to fit in with the kids. We're kids, and we want to go to this party. And in order to be initiated at this party, they have to do this thing called chugging. But it involves taking a tube, like the way, and inserting
it's
it
a
in
beer
your
enema, in other words.
They put the tube into your butt, and then they pour.
They do that on Stern all the time.
They pour alcohol, a beer, into the thing, and it's just. And vomit is a very recurring thing in this thing. It's supposed to be very funny. People are just throwing up on other people all the time, which is supposed to be just like a riot, you know.
That sounds like a future class.
I'll give you another riot.
And don't play it out like, "Oh, okay, here comes the vomiting gag." You know, like we haven't done that enough. You know what I mean?
Rotten Tomatoes says, guess.
Got 8%.
Add a 9 to that. 89%.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes is rigged. But Bill, share your thoughts on how bad this movie is.
It's so bad that Leslie Mann can't even save it.
I know. How did?
I wanted to know if Leslie Mann came away unscathed because she's my favorite.
Somebody mentioned a quote to me about Leslie Mann that I actually found somewhat believable. And I don't know who said this, but a friend told me that Leslie Mann walks the line between adorable and intolerable. And in this movie, she veers towards intolerable.
I don't know. I like Leslie Mann as an actress. I think she's very funny.
Chris Nashawaty at Entertainment Weekly says, "When it's something is done this well, it's certainly a welcome change."
Are you serious?
Yeah, wow. He loves it.
Oh, my God.
Jack Rico said it was great.
So the guy, the third parent is a
Ike
guy by the
Barinholtz.
Name of Ike Barinholtz.
Actually, he's a comic.
What was good in it was
Suicide Squad and Neighbors and
Geraldine Viswanathan
and Bright
Indian woman. The young Indian woman.
The one who plays the wife.
Not the wife. Their daughter.
Oh, she yes.
She had the best comic chops of anybody in the movie.
I thought that the three girls who are trying to lose their virginity from an acting standpoint, dealing with an absolutely horrendous script, did not do a bad job.
Yeah.
I think Leslie Mann, I don't know why she accepted it. John Cena embarrassed himself, and I don't really know who the other guy is. But apparently, they thought he was the dick. In other words, it's like, oh, nobody wants to hang out with this guy. And I didn't think he was any worse or any better than the other two parents, you know?
Well,
but here's another highlight of the movie.
What standard are you comparing
here's another
that
highlight
to?
Of the movie for me. One of the daughters is about to lose her virginity, and Leslie Mann is the mother, and she gets stuck in the hotel room and is hiding under the bed while her daughter is about to lose her virginity and have sex, and she has to wait. I mean, it's not only
that's
like...
That's comedy with a K.
It's distasteful. I mean, it's just awful. Keith, who's Mike Sargent's friend, who's sitting in with us, sitting in the corner there. Doesn't this sound like a movie you want to see, Keith?
Not really.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Keith, like Alfred Hitchcock, appears once in our podcast. It's like a cameo. Right. It's a drop
so,
in.
So I'd say on my Big Apple rating scale, on a out of a possible four, I'm giving Blockers the rarely seen but highly deserved half a wormy apple in
right,
this
but,
particular
right, just
movie.
Just one question. What did you think of the film?
What would you
oh,
give
it? Oh, terrible.
It? What would you give it, Bill?
I don't know if I'd use the Apple scale. My text said it all. It made me want to stop going to screen.
Well, now I wish I'd gone. But we are house divided right. because we're the only ones that hate it. Apparently, a lot of people we know and trust okay. enjoyed it.
So we're so
Jeffrey
so,
Lyons didn't like it. He sat next
so,
to me.
So,
like
so you guys are all going to help me, and the audience could even chime in with this and with tweets if you'd like.
Our whole audience is here today.
I'm doing a spot on Fox 5 this afternoon, and the what we're going to talk about is that Steven Spielberg said that he is open to, after he's doing this next Indiana Jones film, to cast a female in the lead role of the new, to be the new Indiana Jones, and he would change it to Indiana Joan. Okay, so
that's got to be a joke.
Stop.
But nonetheless, if you were to, there is woman empowerment lately in Wonder Woman and all these other films that are, they just had the Tomb Raider movie
yes.
and all that stuff. So if you were to cast a new Indiana Jones and a female lead, who would you guys put in the, and Keith, feel free to chime in on this if you'd like to, who do you think, who could you see as a possibility? Would you go middle-aged? Would you go younger? Well, who would you put in as Indiana Jones?
You know what Saoirse I said? All right. I have an answer right away.
Go ahead.
I'd go with an unknown.
I agree with you.
Just the way Harrison Ford...
Well, did anybody know who Gal Gadot was before she...
Well, we dated, but that's a whole other story. Wow. I don't think I should divulge that on the body. No, I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
Jokes have to be believable.
I mean...
yes, they do.
I think this is a horrible idea. And I know Lisa Rossman is going to hate me. And like, it's like.
Lisa Rossman.
Tiffany Haddish is Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Tiffany, I was just going to say Tiffany Haddish.
Seriously?
Get that ball away from me, chasing me out of.
I don't want no snakes.
Snakes. What are you talking about, snakes? Get these snakes out of
They belong on a plane.
I love
yeah, I don't. I think if you want to, if you take the Lara Croft and do that with that character, you don't have to.
Lara Croft.
You don't have to make
that.
Indiana
Lara
Jane
Croft
out of.
Is Indiana Jones
right?
Hello.
So it's sort of already there. I think it's ridiculous.
All right. Well, I was thinking that who would you cast in it?
But for suggestions,
Alicia Vikander.
Well, she just right. Well, she just did Tomb Raider. Are they? And is Tomb Raider going to?
This
have
could
scene?
Be big for Angelina Jolie. This could be.
We're done with the Tomb Raider
I
series.
Think so.
That's
I think
done.
So.
That's finished. Okay.
She wasn't. You know. I mean.
Tell the Channel 5 people Angelina Jolie could do it.
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, she's been Tomb Raider since we think Tomb Raider is basically what they're doing.
Or Amy Schumer. I think Amy Schumer.
Be
well,
great.
Then you have a comedic. Then you have a comedic.
Indiana Jew.
Ronda Rousey.
Lily Tomlin. Jane Fonda. You saw her as Barbarella 50 years ago. Now she's back as.
You got nothing for this Channel 5 thing now. Nothing.
That's very funny.
You might as well call and cancel.
I'll figure it out.
It'll be less embarrassing.
I'll figure it out.
Will this have aired by the time?
Yes.
Yeah.
It will. But Mike, have you seen anything else interesting that you'd like to share?
Did anybody else see the final of Counterpart?
Which of who?
The Counterpart, the thing with J.K. Simmons on Stars. Because I'm just as confused as I was at the beginning, but now they're clearly going to do it for another season. The big finale was two nights ago, and it got the bigger audience than Stars has ever had before.
No.
So I was just curious if you knew anything about it.
I saw Beirut this morning.
Did you like that?
I did. It's Tony Gilroy, and he, I have to say, I watched Beirut, and then I watched the link of this. And
I sent you the link to say go and see this thing because it's one of the best movies
I
saw.
I thought it was great.
How great is John Hamm? And then let's not give too much away, but
I won't give anything away. But it's great to see a really well-written spy thriller, essentially, is what that is.
Tony Gilroy, for people who don't know, is like Michael Clayton, and he's written a bunch of really smart movies. He directs this one as well.
Yes, he does. And he's getting the hang of it. And I thought that this was...
I think it's really great. I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
I have to tell you that I know a lot of people love, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, I had seen one episode of the new Handmaid's Tale, but they sent me another two. And, you know, the first season, which won all these Emmys, and it was such a brilliant season. Do you watch The Handmaid's Tale?
I read the book, and I saw the first two episodes.
Well, here's the thing. It was such a brilliant first season, and the season ended exactly where the book ends.
Right.
But there is no other book. There's no, like, Handmaid's Tale Part 2. And now it's all up, as opposed to following the framework of the book for the first season, the writers are now in uncharted waters.
Hand make it up to
them. And they have to, make up a story. And I found, although the first episode to be brilliant, now it's just kind of like, where are we going with this? It's like there's no book to follow. And I'm wondering,
Roseanne.
I didn't really care for the second two episodes. I hope it gets better. But I'm thinking like they're kind of like...
Is Elizabeth Moss back?
Yes, everybody's back.
No, I don't know. How'd they get her again?
No. She's obviously signed for several seasons. But I'm just wondering if they just don't know where to go, and it's gonna be disappointing. But they're sending me two more episodes, so by next week I'll update you.
Well, Channel 5 has called you, and they want to know how you would fix Handmaid's Tale.
Now, how often do you do this Channel 5 thing? Is this something you're going to be on again next week?
No. This is, we'll talk about this.
Off air.
But I will
say
that
news organizations from around the world call Neil Rosen daily.
Bill McCuddy and myself and Lisa Rossman are taping another Talking Movies, formerly Talking Pictures for CUNY TV, next week. So we'll tell you more about that when that happens. And other than that, Mike, how do we follow you?
Can I give a shout out? There is a great film that just came out on Monday on HBO. It's called King in the Wilderness.
Saw it last night. And
what did you think?
I thought it was great. I'll tell you, having seen Eyes on the Prize, and we should say this is about Martin Luther King's last three years of his life.
Isn't today the anniversary
of the assassination? I went and I saw it at Riverside Church last week. They had a special screening and, you know, trailers and everything was there. And I have to say, you know, because he gave a speech, which is in the film, at Riverside Church. So you're
the night before in Memphis.
Right. And so I'm in the pew sitting watching, you know, and it definitely, you feel it, you know, with the power of the place.
I've seen a lot of this story in a lot of other movies. Right. I will say that. And Eyes on the Prize.
The assassination, or is this a whole life
story?
It's
just the last 3 years.
What's going on?
Didn't take 3 years to kill him. So it's 3 years leading up to the assassination. There's a chilling moment at the, first of all, the Coretta comes in and sees that they have sort of mangled his body at the funeral home, and a friend of hers takes out some powder.
Right.
I guess he was shot sort of in the jaw, which I didn't realize that it blew his jaw open.
Yes.
I'm sorry to be so graphic, but this is what happened. And the friend says, no, we're going to fix this. And they put some powder on and make him look much better. Then Jackie Kennedy shows up, and I totally forgot that, you know, there was this white world and black world that existed, and it crossed over with the Kennedys, and it crossed over with free-thinking, rightful-thinking people. And I just thought it was amazing that I didn't know about this moment that Jackie Kennedy said, basically, out of my way, I'm going down there, and I'm going
to,
not to upstage anything, but to hold her hand and to say, I've been through this too.
Bobby Kennedy, chronologically...
JFK, then Bobby Kennedy.
And so out of the three of them...
Oh, Martin Luther King before Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
Before Bobby Kennedy. But the same year. I mean, it wasn't that far apart.
I believe it was.
67 and 68, I think. Because this was 68.
This was 68.
Bobby Kennedy was killed in... Had to be 68 because he was campaigning.
I think it was late 68. It was November 68.
Just a few months before Chappaquiddick. So they were still talking about that.
And that's the trifecta.
So there we go.
Come on, Teddy. Well, you can get in the headlines.
Bobby Kennedy got killed either... Right around the California primary.
Yeah.
So it had to be 68 because the primary was
in August or
something. Right. And that was August and this was April.
Okay. So it was.
Well, no, it could be because they said at the post credits of Chappaquiddick, they say that televised thing in 69 that he did.
Yeah, but that was Teddy Kennedy. We're talking Bobby Kennedy.
Okay, Bobby Kennedy. Bobby, so I guess Teddy he did. Kennedy, yeah, yeah, did I guess you're right. Killed. Yeah, it was 68.
He lived a life, a long life. There you go.
Yes,
well, all right. So
very
so,
good.
So highly recommended.
Highly recommended.
Yeah. So it's say really, the name of the documentary on HBO.
It's called King in the Wilderness.
And it premieres.
Premiered on Monday.
Okay.
But it's running now.
I saw it last night. It's on all the HBO, yeah. 1, 2, 3, East, West, those. Or you can get it on demand.
Okay. So where do we follow you, Mike?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike on Screen.
Mike on Screen. Bill Bergoglio, one day we'll get social media, but you can tweet us and we'll get
the
message.
Don't follow me.
He looks at it. Put out hashtag Bill Bergoglio and it'll trend eventually.
There you go.
There you go.
And I'm at Neil Rosen Apples. And Bill McCuddy is at...
At Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy.
Growing every week thanks to this podcast.
I don't know why you would want to know.
Yeah, Keith, our one guest, we've had a studio audience today,
and he's
an illustrator.
Hashtag Jazz Leopard.
Okay, I just want to find out what's coming out next week.
You want to know what's coming out next week?
What's
coming out next week, Bill Bergoglio?
Rampage.
Oh, Rampage.
With Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We also have Sergeant Stubby, an American Hero, an animated tale of a dog who, during World War One, based on a true
Pinch
story.
Me.
Speaking of dogs, when's Isle of Dogs coming out?
Did that come out already? It's opening wide next week.
Truth or Dare, which is a horror movie. Which always makes money for Universal.
Yes, but can I make a mention? My first article for Script Magazine, so it's scriptmag.com, comes out today. It's with the writers from A Quiet Place.
Oh, all right. So, very good.
There you go.
All right, well, anyway, so we'll look at those movies next week, and we'll talk to you next week. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. For Mike Sargent.
Thank you.
Bill Bergoglio.
Yeah, me.
Bill McCuddy.
I was never in that car.
And for me, Neil Rosen, we'll sit around talking movies with you again next week.